and I'm not sure whether it's in your packet or not. It's there, okay. Oh, the summary of inheritance and gift taxes. There's some examples in here that I'll refer you to, and we'll just kind of work through a situation. As you know, the 1977 legislature decided to phase out the inheritance and gift tax. There's usually two arguments that are given for having an inheritance tax. One is to try to avoid large concentrations of wealth being passed on from generation to generation. The other is to have the inheritance tax kind of serve as a backup to income taxes, so that if you have certain kinds of income that escape the income tax, they'll eventually be taxed with the inheritance tax at the time of death. So apparently, 77, those arguments weren't sufficient to warrant keeping the inheritance tax. We have to go through several steps. The first is to decide what property is subject to inheritance tax when there's a death. Basically, for Oregon residents, it's all of their property in the state, and then their intangible personal property outside the state would be part of their this gross estate, anyway, to begin with. If there's property held in joint ownership, such as business property, only that portion that is owned or the interest of the decedent would be included in his estate. It wouldn't necessarily be all the property. So basically, it's the property then that the decedent has an interest in or owns outright, but there is an exception to this process, and that's the property held by husband and wife. And if the husband and wife have property that they own jointly and have right of survivorship in terms of it being automatic as to the spouse receiving the property upon the death of the other, then the law says that the property is owned jointly by both, or each have a 50% interest in it, so that when one dies, only half of that jointly owned property between spouses is in the decedent's estate. If you look at example one, then we'll see how this works. Out of a total of $1 million there, we have owned jointly. We assume that the husband dies, and then only half of it, or the $500,000, is in the husband's gross taxable estate. He also owns some property separately, the $200,000, all of that is in his estate, and then if the wife has some separately owned property, the $100,000, that would not be included in his estate. So out of the total value held between them, the $1.3 million, only $700,000 would be part of the husband's estate. Now, once we have that figure, there's also some other things that happen as far as what's in the estate and what isn't. Certain pensions are excluded from being in the estate. Social Security benefits and railroad pensions, for example, are excluded, and parts of other types of pensions, parts or all of other types of pensions, depending upon the situation. Also, any gifts made within 3 years of death would be included in the estate. They are, in effect, brought back into the estate, even though they have been gifted prior to death. And that avoids having to determine whether the gift was given in contemplation of death or not. This used to be a big issue when gift taxes were less than inheritance taxes, right? But that's not the case anymore, so it's really not much of an issue as far as the state is concerned, but it used to be. And when the feds changed, the state changed to correspond to the federal method of bringing gifts back into the estate. Okay, so that's basically how you determine what's in the estate, what isn't in the estate. Once you know that, you have to go and determine how to value the property that ends up in the estate. And basically, that's the true cash value of the property at the time of death for whatever kind of property, but there is one exception to that rule, and that's farmland. Back in 77, when these changes were being made, it was decided that any farmland in the estate would be valued at its farm use value, not at its market value. And it would be the regular January 1 farm use value. So that's the exception, and then that farm property could also be held by a closely held corporation or partnership. It wouldn't necessarily have to be held by an individual.
Excuse me. Is there any kind of a limitation on that land then subsequently being used for farming for a period of time or anything?
There is a separate issue, I think.
I know there is at the federal level.
You have to continue it as a farm.
I know they do at the federal level. I'm not sure about state level.
You're under, well, the penalty, of course, I don't know how they tied that together, but the penalty for taking it out of tax deferral, as far as property tax is concerned, you pay a penalty, I think it's a 10-year factor, isn't it? Whether that covers inheritance, I'm not sure.
No, that's entirely different.
That's what I thought.
That's entirely separate. But I know the feds require that it continue to be used for farm use, or they get hit with more taxes.
Right, but for how long?
It's retroactive. Is it
Five or 10 years, I believe.
I think it's at least five.
At least five, and maybe 10.
Okay. What does the state dictate?
As far as I know, the state doesn't have that requirement.
Okay.
But they may. I'll check on that.
All right.
Okay, so you basically then have a valuation procedure. Then from that, you have certain deductions and exemptions that can be subtracted to reduce the gross value. It's the normal deductions. Any debts that are outstanding, if, for example, if they had a mortgage on some property, the value of the mortgage would be subtracted out from the gross value. Any taxes that are owed, whether they be income taxes, property taxes, etc., would be deductible. And then your normal expenses for administering and closing the estate, perhaps some burial expenses, etc., all of those would be used to reduce the value. And then the exemption that's referred to here, of course, is the standard exemption that the legislature is using to phase out the inheritance tax. You have the schedule there at the bottom of page 3, table 1. And for 1981, it now has become $100,000. Okay. So 79 was 70,000, it's now 100,000. So for those who can make the estate's deaths starting or occurring this year, 1981, if the estate is of such size that they can use the full value of this exemption, right, the tax equivalent tax reduction then is $3,400, right, that they would pay less this year over last year because of the increase in the value which is exempt here. And that goes on up then to half a million in 1985 and 86, and in 1987, no tax.
So the real message here is don't die until 1987.
If you're rich.
Unless you have a permit. Go ahead.
All right, then at the top of page 4, you have an example then to kind of put all of this together. You take that original gross estate of $700,000. In this example, there's deductions of $150,000 to arrive at a net taxable estate. And then using the exemption here, it's the 1978 level when this was first put together, $50,000, which would now be $100,000. And you are left with a taxable amount of $500,000 there. Right. That's the taxable value. The tax rate is 12%, flat rate no matter what the amount, no graduated rate schedules anymore, like under the old system, 12%. And on that $500,000 then, 12% would be $60,000 tax. All right, once you have a tax, you have to decide where it's going to come out of the estate, basically. How is it apportioned among the beneficiaries of the estate? In example 3 here, I've assumed that there's a wife, son, daughter, and some money going to charity, right? And the distribution there is 300, et cetera, of the 550,000. That's what I am assuming each would receive. So that gives them a share then of the estate. The wife gets 300 of the 550, right? Or 6/11 of the total. So on the last column then, on the right, the apportioned tax, you have the total of 60,000. And 6/11 of that is the wife's apportioned tax, or the $32,727, and so on for the other heirs. And so the tax is apportioned out among the heirs according to their share of the total. Right. But that doesn't necessarily mean that all of that is going to be collected. There's tax credits to take into account.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Hammond?
Not necessarily at the moment or today, but sometime. I'd like to know about the time available to the person inheriting something for paying a tax. when is it due, and what are the general, either formal or informal arrangements that can be made to pay?
I'm coming to that.
Oh, all right.
Okay. The tax credit here is basically for the surviving spouse and each minor or handicapped child, minor being, I think, under age 18, and then handicapped basically meaning not able to support themselves. So at the top of the next page, then, you have how this credit is changing for the spouse and for the minor or handicapped child. You can see here that over time that this credit is decreasing. For 81 and 82, it's $48,000. It was as high as $54,000. Right, and then next to that, you have the equivalent value exempt. So now we're talking about tax dollars being reduced. What does that mean in terms of value, right, given a 12% tax rate? So you have the $48,000 tax credit, meaning $400,000 in value is exempt for the spouse or the children here. Right, now, if we combine that table with table one, where we saw the increase in the exempt value, we can see that $100,000 is exempt for the spouse, another $400,000 in terms of the tax credit, or $500,000 total. So the point of this is, where as the value exempt increases, the tax credit for the spouse decreases, but the total that can be passed on to the spouse remains at $500,000.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Monroe.
So this year, a $1 million estate held jointly by husband and wife would be totally exempt for the surviving spouse. If the entire amount was left to the surviving spouse, it would be totally exempt.
That's correct. And that has been true since 1978. And it will remain true until 1987.
Only estates in excess of $1 million or estates left to somebody other than a surviving spouse or a dependent child would be taxed. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it could be more than that if farm use land was involved, for example.
Are you going to have figures for us on the total revenue from annual revenue from inheritance tax?
Yes.
Now and projected in the remaining years of the phase out?
Well, I have what's in the governor's budget. I haven't looked at anything beyond that or tried to. Okay, so you have that kind of credit for the spouse and children. You also have the other kind of standard credits here. Property left to charitable organizations has a credit, and we'll see how that works in a moment. But it has to be used for religious, charitable, scientific, literary, educational, the standard uses for that kind of credit. And also any money or property left to government entities that has to be used for public purpose is subject to a credit. And then going back to the gift, tax paid on that gift that was made within 3 years of death, where we said it was going to be brought back into the estate, that gift tax also acts as a credit. So that you don't have to have paid that gift tax and then bring it back and pay an inheritance tax on it. The gift tax is also a credit. All right, so then if we look at example four at the bottom of page five, we see how we have still got some cold. Apportioned tax listed there again, and then we can see the tax credit, how that affects the apportioned tax. Right, the wife had an apportioned tax of a little over $32,000. Right? She is subject to up to $48,000 in a tax credit. She can only use the $32,000, right? Which means that her apportioned tax is zero. For the son and daughter, assuming that they're not minor or handicapped, there's no tax credit for them, so that their tax payable is that which is apportioned. And then that apportioned to the charitable contribution, of course, is subject to the tax credit for a zero tax payable on that amount. So the tax payable then is just the sum of the tax apportioned to the son and daughter in this example. And that's basically what the state would collect. All right, so that brings us up to determining the tax at the state level. There's one other part that has to be taken into account, and that's the federal credit. For the federal estate tax, they allow a certain amount of credit for any state inheritance or estate taxes. And it's referred to as the pickup tax. Some of you are familiar with that terminology. So, for example, the minimum state inheritance tax is equal to what the federal credit is, or the pickup tax that's allowed on the federal return. And to just use a simple example, suppose the federal credit was $1,000, and we went through this process and say we came up with a tax payable to the state of $500. The state would then make the minimum state tax payable the full $1,000. They would make full use of that federal credit. And so you normally have to pay the $500 to the state. The additional $500 that the Fed is allowing for your credit then is also payable to the state, so that on that estate, right, the state would collect $1,000. It would not increase your federal tax any. What the state is doing there is saying, all right, instead of that $500 additional credit that the feds are allowing being paid to the federal government, the state's going to collect it. It doesn't increase the tax at all. And this pickup tax then continues even after 1987. The state inheritance tax will basically be equivalent to the federal credit allowed. But it won't completely disappear. We'll still have the pickup portion. Okay, normally your inheritance tax return has to be filed within 9 months of death. There is an extension of 10 years that can be applied for reasonable cause. And the state has adopted rules which basically say reasonable cause for the state is the same as reasonable cause for the federal government, i.e., there has to be some good reason why this tax cannot be paid immediately, because it would perhaps require selling the property at a loss or some other reason at a reduced value, or it would require breaking up property or for some reason like that. So that the 10-year extension is possible, and that requires a 9% interest.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Senator Monroe?
Not the 9%, is that a statutorily set rate?
Yes, it is.
That was set in 1977?
Yes, I believe so.
Maybe we ought to be reviewing that, too, given what's happened to interest rates since 1977. It appears to me, well, I was just thinking that if I got a huge inheritance and owed the inheritance tax, I'd automatically defer it for 10 years whether I needed to or not, pay them 9% interest if I could justify it in any way, because
if you could show
I'll take all the
cost.
9% money I can get.
Sure. Okay, well, that basically takes care of the inheritance tax. I'm ready to say a few things about the gift tax if we're ready to proceed.
Any questions from the committee? Okay, go ahead.
All right, the gift tax then parallels pretty much the inheritance tax, so you can keep it brief. Basically, there's a gift made when something of value is transferred and an equal value is not received in return. That's in general terms how you determine whether a gift is made or not. You're giving something away and not getting back something of equal value. And it's, if you didn't have an inheritance tax, there wouldn't be any need to have a gift tax. But if you have an inheritance tax, you kind of need the gift tax. Otherwise, people would give everything away as much as possible while they were alive and not wait until death. So the gift tax kind of parallels the inheritance tax. When is a gift made? Again, not receiving equivalent value in return. But any business transactions are excluded from this. Right? Basically, it's just personal transactions when you determine whether a gift is made or not. You don't consider the business side of it, normal business practices. There's also some trade-offs or gifts between husband and wife that basically don't count as gifts or aren't subject to tax. Gifts are valued at full cash value, just like for inheritance tax.
My wife's operated that way for a long time, I'm sure. Go ahead, yes, Senator Hanlon.
Steve, suppose the gift is farmland.
All right, I was just going to say, if the gift is farmland, there's no provision for it being valued at farm use value. so you have to wait until death to get that special valuation. Also, there's gift splitting between husband and wife, where if the husband gives it, it can be considered as being given as half from each.
Yes, Senator Monroe.
You said that normal business transactions don't count as gifts. How do you tell what's a normal business transaction? What if I wanted to, I'm going to die and I wanted to leave something to my son and try and get around the inheritance tax, and so I sold him a million-dollar piece of property for $50,000 or something like that, bona fide sale.
Would that be a bona fide sale?
Well, would it be?
No.
Okay.
No, that I don't think that
would
qualify.
Be considered. It would be considered a gift.
Yes.
Okay.
But
what if I sold it to him for $900,000?
I don't know. Which
way
that would be ruled.
I wonder if he incorporates and issues stock.
But
Senator Today and I will figure out a solution.
Some way
to
of getting around
that
solution
point.
To it.
He'll tell you the revenue department has pretty well got it.
My question is, Senator this McFarland? Gift material will expire at the same time the inheritance tax.
It will. Yes, it will.
You guys going to get on the ball?
Or be so slow that it's not necessary.
Oh, someone, we have maybe a death in mind or something. It's kind of morbid what we're talking about. If there are further questions, go ahead and finish your presentation.
The standard exemptions, of course, apply here to social welfare organizations, again, for the same purposes as before. What's different here is that you have your annual exclusion of your $3,000 per recipient, same as the federal law, so that you can give $3,000 to anybody each year without worrying about the gift tax. And for husbands and wives, you can give $6,000 to one individual, right, tax-free, each using the $3,000 exemption for that individual recipient.
Means you should have a large family.
No, Senator. Go ahead.
Who knows better?
Yes.
So it's the value of the gift less the $3,000 exemption, right, that gives you your taxable gift then. There's also the lifetime exemption. Besides the $3,000 exemption, right? So for your whole lifetime, you can give a certain cumulative total of gifts in addition to the $3,000 tax-free. And you see how that is changes over time in Table 3 on page 8. Right. Again, this is the method of phasing out the gift tax in concert with the inheritance tax.
That is in addition to the $3,000 yearly, or is
yes.
that counted in?
No, that's in addition to the $3,000. All right, so for example, 1981, right, the lifetime exemption is $100,000.
Okay.
So if you had not made any gifts in over $3,000 to one individual prior to 1981, you have not used any of your lifetime exemption. In 1981, you could give $3,000 to an individual plus $100,000, or a total of $103,000 to one individual, tax-free.
Then this is Oregon's interpretation.
Yes, this is Oregon law.
Okay, I've dealt with all this just recently, but it was in California. But the federal government adds that $3,000 a year in. So
if it was made within 3 years of death, yes.
No, there it goes clear back.
Okay, all right.
If
excuse
it,
me.
If
the
you
feds,
say you
yes.
have a child that you've given $3,000 a year for 20 years, if it goes over that total cumulative, you're through. You can only give them whatever this amount is, like $50,000 or $70,000 or $100,000. And if you go beyond that, even though you have done it within the year's gift tax each year, you are through.
Right, at the federal level, they have the unified system, yes.
Okay.
That's
Oregon
different.
Does not do it that way. Ours is that you can do the $3,000 a year plus that lifetime total.
That's right. That's right. But once you've used up that lifetime total,
then you can't use the $3,000 a year.
You can still use the $3,000, but anything over that $3,000 is subject to gift tax.
Okay.
So again, you know, the value of increasing from the $70,000 to $100,000 lifetime exemption at 12% again for your gift tax rate, being same as inheritance, is $3,600. I've just gone through a rather complicated example there and showing how that increase in lifetime exemption can have an effect. That's not necessary to go through now, I don't think. It's kind of complicated. I've mentioned the tax rate. As far as calculation of the tax, the donor pays the tax. The recipient of the gift is not responsible for the tax. So there's that simplifies it, and you don't have to worry about apportioning out anything or making it complicated like it sometimes can be under the inheritance tax. So at the bottom then, in example 7, I've just kind of summarized the process that we have talked about in terms of the tax calculation, where here I have a 1979 gift of $100,000, taking away the annual exclusion, using up the lifetime exemption, which for 79 was the $70,000, leaving a net taxable gift of $27,000 times 12%, arriving at the gift tax of $3,200. Now, for the gift tax, there's no credits or deferral either, like for the inheritance tax. So it's rather simple and straightforward. At the bottom of that last page, you see some of the revenue figures for both the inheritance and gift tax, and the total from 1975 on. If you notice that it's increased through 1978-79, and then for 79-80, there was a drop from 30.4 million to 27.4. To make the estimate in the governor's budget for the 79-81 biennium, the receipts for this second year of the biennium will have to be a little over $30 million combined, inheritance and gift. For 1981-83, the estimate in the governor's budget is $51.4 million, 11% decrease over the 79-81 biennium. The reason for that is one, well, I guess, I would imagine that you have the effect of inflation on values, for one thing. So that when we started this phase out, it was a little bit surprising at first to realize that revenues were still going up. Right? But it was because of the inflated value. But that's going to catch up with us, I think, maybe here pretty soon. But you have that effect. But you also have more people probably taking advantage of the 10-year extension. So you don't get all of the money within 9 months of death, necessarily. It's spread out a little bit more. And then, again, there's... Well, that's the two main factors, but also there's a factor where you don't have to pay the tax until you actually come into possession of what you're inheriting, in effect. So that if there's some delay in the wealth being passed on for one reason or another, that can delay the payment of the tax. There are these kinds of effects, then, that have to be taken into account. It's very difficult to estimate what inheritance and gift tax revenue is going to be. As far as legislation goes, there's not much in the works. No proposals from the governor that deal with inheritance and gift tax. There's a few bills, administrative bills, I think, in by the Bar Association. And I have only seen one other bill to date that would deal with how pensions are included, what portion of them are taxable. Other than that, I don't think you'll see much.
Thank you. Questions? Okay, we will take up at our next meeting our work plan, the personal income tax. And are there any questions or discussion from the committee before I adjourn the meeting?
Is it tomorrow?
Tomorrow at 1:30. Tomorrow is Thursday, is it not?
Yes.
All day.
Well, then tomorrow at 1:30 we shall gather again, our ecumenical group, and go into the personal income tax. Any further discussion? Hearing none, the meeting's adjourned.
Sure, we're ecumenical.
I am.